This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 501, the Levi's episode. We're going to look back at USC's 66-14 win over the Nevada Wolfpack at the Coliseum on Saturday night. We're going to play the rave line calls for you guys, open up the mailbag, look back with some hindsight from a few days of after the game, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rant of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rant of Troy. Our email address is rantoftroy@fansetta.com. Our phone number is 818-643-7227.
Suck it, Whisper and Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host here in the Rant of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alisa Dertola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. How do you like that? The Levi's episode? Does that work for you?
I guess it works.
You got the reference, right?
No.
Were you like a Wrangler girl growing up?
I certainly didn't wear branded jeans, if that's what you're asking.
Wow.
I wore whatever, you know,
wow,
jeans my
you
mom
were
would
Lee
find.
You were a Lee person.
Probably, yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I wore whatever jeans my mom would pick up from, like, Costco or, I don't know, like.
You were the Kohl's. Kirkland signature jean person.
Yeah, yeah. I was Kirkland signature a lot of things, which is unfortunate because you now have a Kirkland signature hat and you're not wearing it today. But
and I know it's my new favorite hat. It seriously, if it's nice. Yeah. Not that we're sponsored by Kirkland, but you
love
know,
to be though.
We wouldn't say no. randomtroy@fanside.com. Big shout out to everybody joining us here on Labor Day, spending their final holiday hours with us here on Labor Day, a big 3-day weekend. The 3-day weekend that usually starts the college football season. For SC, it didn't because SC played in week zero. But hey, the Trojans are already 2-0, 1/3 of the way to bowl eligibility. Look at that. So a big shout out to everyone joining us here on YouTube Live. We got Ram and Murdy, Cigar, Chalison, Dan. Ernesto is here, Kenny's here, Finding on MC, Darlene is here, LA Fred, Ernesto, SJ, Ricky D, a bunch of people in the chat. Thank you as always. Be sure to like the stream. It helps grow the show. And if you're not subscribed, we get the little numbers. We get the analytics. Like half of you guys are not subscribed. So Be sure to hit the subscribe button so that way you're aware of every time that we go live, which is every Monday and Wednesday during the college football season, with Fallout episodes on Mondays, game preview episodes on Wednesdays, and then Saturdays after the game, we are looking at CarCasts, which are our instant reaction sort of kind of thing, which comes up about 2 hours after every home game and about 15 minutes or so after every road game. And then you can join us over with the Rot Squad. Become a member here on YouTube and get members-only content, including our Thursday night shows, which there will not be one this week, but we will be back next week. Every Thursday night from next week onward is the Rain of Troy After Dark show, which has been a blast. You get all of our bonus content for $4.99 a month, and you get to join our Discord, chat with all the other Rotbot and Rot Squad members, and it's a good time. $4.99 a month, you can join us here on YouTube. Yeah, it's all fun stuff. So go do your stuff, people. Help support the show.
Yes. Cosign.
Cool. That broadcast school's really paid off.
I mean, I'm just saying. Yeah, we know the deal. Smash that like button.
Yeah, you gotta go. What's up, guys?
What's welcome up, guys?
To YouTube. Yeah, and of course, this episode is brought to you by DraftKings, where if you're a new user, you can receive $150 bonus bets instantly by following just three steps: create an account, deposit, and then wager $5 on any sport. Whether your first wager wins or loses, you can still receive $150 in bonus bets. All you have to do is use the code RANDOMTROY when you sign up. And the best part is, using that code RANDOMTROY not only gets you the bonus, but it helps support us, helps support the show. So if you're considering signing up for DraftKings, use our code RANDOMTROY to maximize your bets. This offer is available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. Yeah, big shout out to DraftKings for sponsoring us, as they have been for the last few months. Yeah, it's been a big supporter of the show. And welcome to Dante Ferrari, by the way, joining the Rot Supporters Club. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Alicia, we got a bunch of news to get to, but before we do, we got to listen to the rave line, because the rave line was back. USC wins 66-14 over Nevada on Saturday. A big win for the Trojans. They sort of match what they did against Rice last year. A 66-17 win over Rice. This was 66-14. Kind of bested it a little bit. Let's get to the rave line calls and what you guys had to say by calling into the rant line.
Michael, Alicia, this is Tony from Denora, PA. Hey, Rain of Troy, this is L.A. Fred calling.
Rain of Troy Radio, what's up? This is Dave from Orange County.
Hey, guys, this is Michael on the 563. I actually have nothing to complain about.
This is definitely a rave line call. Nothing really to rant about. I mean,
because it's 66 to whatever the hell.
Can we first all appreciate and give thanks as to how lucky we are to be able to watch Caleb Williams? He's played in 16 total games for us. And in 8 of those, he has 4 or more touchdown passes. Now ties Matt Barkley at the top of the USC all-time leaderboard in that category. And to put it in perspective, he played 31 fewer games than Barkley did in his career.
The offense did what it was supposed to do today. The defense stepped up and played pretty well. Lots of 3-and-outs, lots of pressure on quarterback.
The defensive line was totally dominant.
A couple busted plays that resulted in points for Nevada, but we had no business. We did what we were supposed to do.
But what we're supposed to do and what we do are not always the same. So it's so freaking great.
It's just a great bounce back from D. Let's build on that for the next game. They clearly made adjustments from game 1 to game 2, which is ultimately all we really want.
Good to have something to be complimentary about and not have to go ranting about stuff.
It's clear for everyone to see that this team has better players on it. They're better athletes across the field, and I think the ceiling is much higher this year. But equally important, I think the floor is also higher. Now, I'll be the first to admit I am not a defensive coordinator, but I have watched a lot of football, and I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so I got that going for me.
All the Rotbots out there, hope you all had a good time today, and we get to see plenty more.
Talk to you guys next week.
Let's all have a good week, and fight on, everybody.
Okay, that's it. Fight on.
Fight on.
Fight on.
Fight out.
Bye.
There you go. There's the rave line. The phone number is always 818-643-7227. You can give us your calls during, before, after, whatever, the game. You can rant and rave and do all those things. Alicia, a lot less, fewer calls, I guess you could say, after a win. People are, you know, celebrating a win in different ways, but still plenty of calls from the old Robots.
Some good calls.
Yeah.
Great ones. I thought there were some great observations in there, some good one-liners in there. And yeah, I think the Robots get, I think they get what happened in that game and what it means for the future of this team and feeling a little bit better, a little bit more confident. We'll see what comes next week against Stanford. Hopefully it stays a rave line.
Yeah, 100%. USC and Stanford, Lock and Horn, 7:30 later this weekend on Saturday. But Alicia, we got a bunch of news to get to. Let's get to the news before we start talking more about USC and Nevada.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Alicia, we got to start with the news about Relique Brown. He did not play on Saturday against Nevada. And the news, according to Luca Evans of the OC Register, is that USC's Relique Brown is currently planning to redshirt his sophomore season. His father, Roscoe, told the SoCal News Group could change, but Brown's been limited by a lingering hamstring tweak this fall, his father said.
Yeah, it feels increasingly like this is Gary Bryant Jr. all over again, in the sense of take your red shirt so that you can get through the rest of the season and then have an opportunity to transfer after it's all done. That might not be the case. Things can change. I mean, Gary Bryant Jr., I think...
It might not be the case, but this just looks too much like that situation, right?
It looks a lot like that. I am open to the concept of a hamstring injury being a limiting factor for him.
Mm-hmm.
Hamstring injuries are notoriously difficult injuries to deal with in terms of the way that they just are nagging and can have lingering effects. So maybe that is... I I don't know, that's sort of an element to this that
sure
that sort of goes along. But we've talked about this before. I can't muster that much about it. I think Relique is a talent who, wherever he is playing football, will be a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
At USC, he's not a weapon that is a make or break piece for this offense. So,
by no means of his own.
Yeah.
SC has a million different, like, the arsenal is so huge, right? Like,
yeah.
SC has a million different ways to gain a yard. That yeah. is the best problem in the world to have. From the SC perspective, we talked about in the car cast, you got guys like Kyle Ford who left last year, and CJ Williams left, and Gary Bryant Jr. left. And
but it's interesting you bring up those names, because if you want to find an area of this as far as him leaving USC, I can't muster a lot. There is some anxiety, I think, about, you know, CJ Williams is at Notre Dame. Gary Bryant Jr. is at Oregon. Kyle Ford is at UCLA. These are teams that USC plays, that USC will have to face, and that these transfers could come back and bite USC in the butt.
CJ Williams is at Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Well, Wisconsin's a
big... You said to double check. I was like...
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
I'm there for a second, yeah.
I was a Big Ten program that USC will be facing.
Notre Dame famously
a Big Ten program.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's probably the anxiety, if there's any.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, you can't force him to stay at USC. And at a certain point, it's out of your control.
Yeah. Yeah. The beat goes on. Obviously, Relique Brown is a player that you absolutely want on your team. Anyone in the country would want him on the team. And you want a healthy Relique Brown, too. So... if this truly is just the injury, then you want him to get healthy and be able to compete as soon as he's fresh and able to do so. If there's the other element of the transfer stuff, then there is.
Yeah.
SC is in a position to have depth there, which helps. But yeah, that's ultimately, this is a good problem to have. Of all the problems that you're going to have in the world for SC, this is fortunately one that doesn't overly hurt, and that has nothing to do with Relique Brown himself. That's just because of everything else. So, yeah, obviously you wish him the best with his recovery of the hamstring and everything else going forward. Let's go to the other news that came out, which is that USC will not have direct representation in the College Football Playoff Committee, because according to a tweet from Brett McMurphy, USC AD Mark Harlan is replacing USC AD and former Washington AD Jen Cohen on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. You gotta thought about this, because I think there's you could read this as, like, you know, semi damaging to SC's chances of everything, but, like, I don't know. I think it's in all the Pac-12 schools' best interest for the Pac-12 to be represented. So I don't know that this is overly big negative shrug.
It shouldn't be. I think her stepping down in order to focus on her duties as the USC athletic director makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of work to do. They need to rebuild a department that has gone through turnover and controversy and all of this kind of stuff. They are a department that's working on a massive realignment workload in terms of getting ready to go to the Big Ten, to have travel, to have logistics, to have all of this kind of stuff set up, not just for football, not just for basketball, but for all of the sports. There is a ton of work that Jen Cohen has to do. And I totally get her not wasting her, not that it would be a waste of time, but, like, the people on the playoff selection committee, that is an additional thing on your plate that makes more sense for someone like Mark Harlan, who is established, who has head coaches, who has everything in order that he can afford to go ahead and take on that role. Even with Utah moving to the Big 12, it's not as big of a logistical nightmare as the move to the Big 10.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not in his first months on the job. So it just makes a lot of sense. And in the end, the committee is not supposed to be influenced by the biases of
Don't you have to recuse yourself?
That's what I was going to say. Jen Cohen was not going to be involved in conversations about USC.
She might have had to recuse herself for the Washington conversations, too.
Yeah, so it doesn't, I don't think it really makes a difference. In the end, I think it's very clear to me that USC and their involvement in the College Football Playoff will be fairly black and white. I don't think there's going to be very many scenarios on the table where USC is in the conversation, but in such a gray area that the makeup of the playoff committee will be impactful. I think that gray area, it might help to not have your athletic director be having to recuse themselves in the end.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But I think that there is the most likely scenario is that there isn't a black and white, maybe not the most likely scenario, but like there absolutely is a world in which SC is the third, fourth, fifth, sixth best team, potentially, you know, there, because we've seen that before where SC is like.
What I'm saying more is if USC is a one loss Pac-12 champion, then I don't think it will come down to the makeup of the College Football Playoff committee, selection committee.
I don't think it would come down to exactly the makeup of the committee, no.
If USC is a two-loss Pac-12 champion, then USC will only have itself to blame for not getting into the playoff,
that's
not
fair.
The makeup of the right. selection committee.
Yeah. I'm just saying that there could be a world in which SC needs to get a decision made on somebody else. Does that matter if that person in the room is Mark Harlan versus Jen Cohen? I don't really think it does,
no.
Especially when you have to recuse yourself there.
Yeah.
Also, I really don't think there's that much of a bias influence.
No.
Maybe I'm naive, but I don't think there's that much of a pro boost that you're going to get by having, you know, your AD around, even if you have to recuse yourself and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Shrug. The point that you made at the beginning, that she needs to focus on SC right now. I think that needs to be the top priority, especially when you come in to a situation where there's been talk of, you know, administrative dysfunction, right? Like, mm-hmm. Then you need to go fix those things. That needs to be the top priority, rather than taking a flight to DFW twice a week. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So. Yeah,
100%.
All right. Let's get into talking about the game. USC and Nevada, the Trojans, get a big win. 66-14, USC matches their output 94 years ago when they also beat Nevada most recently at the Coliseum. 66-0 was that game in 1929. 66-14 was the output in this one. The Trojans, obviously, this is a game in which they thoroughly dominated. We talked about it in the CarCast. 668 total yards, 27 first downs. Literally half of USC's plays in this game, 27 of 54 total plays, went for first downs. The Trojans averaged 12.4 yards per play. If you do that against anybody, you should win the game pretty handily, and they definitely did that on Saturday against Nevada. Alicia, it's been a couple days. Looking back at it, any new thoughts? Any new ideas here?
It was a good performance. I think it was a good performance on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
On all three sides of the ball and on special teams as well. I thought it was a good performance. I think when I was doing my rewatch, there were a couple bigger things that stood out. Number one, kudos are in order for a few players. We already gave Marshawn Lloyd a lot of kudos, but he deserves more because the kid is just out there embodying everything that I realized this while I was rewatching it. He embodies everything that made me fall in love with Travis Dye as a football player immediately. Mm-hmm. Marshawn Lloyd embodies all of that.
Yeah.
As a rusher with the ball in his hands, he is out there fighting for literally every inch. He has great vision. He's got great speed. Somebody who is that powerful and difficult to take down when they have the speed also to get to the outside, like he did on his touchdown run, absolutely outstanding. And then there's the block. There's the effort plays. There's the blocking. Keely Yore put up on Twitter the clip of the Taj Washington touchdown that happened over the middle of the field, and it is insane how Taj Washington catches that ball in the middle of the field, just about 10 yards ahead of where Marshawn Lloyd is. And like I wrote in my notes that Lloyd shoots like a bullet out of a gun to get down the field in time to make the block that springs Taj Washington for that touchdown. When you stop the play at the moment that Washington gets the ball, he should not score a touchdown on that play. But the max effort that Lloyd gives in order to get down the field to lay that block cannot be overstated. But I also wanted to give some kudos for other players on that play, which sort of exemplify what you see from USC's offense more often than not, and that you see throughout the game too. Everybody is a willing blocker. Like, to me, that touchdown was the epitome of a team touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
They send a blitz and Caleb recognizes it, handles it, gets the ball out to Taj Washington. Taj Washington is available, as he always seems to be. Marshawn Lloyd has the wherewithal and the effort level and the sheer want to go down there and lay that block. At the same time, Dorian Singer has his man held up the entire way. He is blocking off the man that he's responsible for the entire way, because if he loses his block, Taj Washington is getting stopped on that play as well. So big ups to Dorian Singer as well. And then also, if you watch that play over in the sort of right top right-hand corner, you see Mario Williams, who is mm-hmm. probably 15 to 20 yards out of the play and could just let up and not do it. He maintains his block of his DB until the whistle. He plays through the whistle. Nowhere near the play. It was not necessarily for him to hold that in order for the play to be successful, but he did it because that is the standard that USC has set on offense, and everybody buys into it. Every single player on this offense seems to buy into that mentality, and that is why this offense is great, because it starts at the top with Caleb, but it trickles down to every single person is just out there doing their job, and it's just mm-hmm. lovely to see that from an offense. I feel like we have been commending USC wide receivers for their willingness to block for years now. I don't think that's necessarily...
Since Darius Rogers.
It's not been a problem
Juju
for
USC. Juju was great at it too.
Yeah. But it's nice to see that continue, that level of effort to continue.
Yeah, 100%. I think you go back and watch that play and it looks like it was drawn up that way. I don't know that it was. I think that
if it was, maybe, Lincoln Riley's
maybe
playing
it is,
40
but
chess.
Like, I didn't necessarily think that it was because, you know, Mario Williams is still presumably a target in which Caleb Williams can throw the ball to there. So, but the way that it's drawn up is absolutely like as if the whole plan was for Taj to come across on the post and have those blockers out in front and just completely pave the way for him. And it looked beautiful, and that's what you want. You want your guys to continue to play until the whistle. And one of the things where I think that we're going to see get better is the wide receivers as the play goes on, when it comes to building a rapport with Caleb Williams on the scramble drills.
Mm-hmm.
I thought SC was really good at that last year. There was the touchdown pass to Brendan Rice, where he scrambles and scrambles and scrambles and scrambles and then throws the touchdown pass on Saturday. I think SC, that's one of the areas where SC can still get better at, because there were moments in this game where Caleb Williams sort of scrambles and then either forces a pass downfield and takes a shot or has to throw it away or whatnot. And I think that last year Jordan Addison was very good at finding a way to get open, and Mario Williams was very good at finding a way to get open. That comes from the chemistry that you have with playing with your guys. Mm-hmm. You're going to see more of that as it goes on. But the harder thing to me is getting the buy-in on the blocking downfield, especially in a play in which you are not close to the ball carrier, to whoever that is. If it's Taj Washington on the other side of the field, the wherewithal to continue your blocks, because that might affect the play, is a big deal, and absolutely can lead to a touchdown, as it did with Taj Washington there.
I
think you look back at the offensive performance, and there's little nitpicks that I think that you can say that SC needs to improve on, but that's what the season's for. That's what the season progression is for, with chemistry. Everything else, solid. I think the offensive line, you can say the offensive line could still take a step to get better, to have more protection.
I think it was
keep Caleb in the pocket more, but also Caleb Williams is the best quarterback in the world at the college football level in being outside of the pocket. So
I think it was a little bit of a rough day for Justin Dedich.
Sure.
He had a couple penalties. There was a play where he sort of was a little bit of a revolving door that resulted in an issue. So I think he will have better days than he had against Nevada. I'd rather him have the penalties and all that kind of stuff against Nevada, because then it's a reminder you need to clean that all up.
Right.
But yeah, I would agree with you. I think any criticism you have of the offense in this game is very nitpicky. And I think there is a lot of praise to go around. It said, again, we're just going to have to sort of keep saying it, but it's wild that Dorian Singer's one-handed catch on that broken play is not something we need to spend time on. Mario Williams, I thought, was all over the field, and I was confused because I kept noting, like, Mario Williams is popping up. Mario Williams is popping up. And I was like, why is his stat line look what it is? Mario Williams had two catches with nice gains pulled back because of penalties.
Yeah. He also had one that was nearly a big gainer downfield.
Yeah. So I think, again, Mario Williams is approaching like Taj Washington levels of underrated at this point. So it's
easy to forget dudes. There's so many weapons that you're sitting there. You're like, yeah, I forgot that this guy was on the team. Right. Not literally, but it's easy to sort of lull yourself into, having that mindset of like, oh yeah, Brendan Rice is there, right?
But
there's Brendan Rice.
That's the impossible task of an opposing defensive coordinator too, because one thing I noted in my notes was, like, for instance, Marshawn Lloyd, I did not realize when he committed to come transfer to USC that he was such a dangerous receiving threat. And on that play where Caleb hits him over the middle, which was even better on review, that is the too small blanket idea that we've talked about in the past, where when you're defending, you basically have a too small blanket, and you need to decide, are you going to cover your head or you're going to cover your feet? You're going to have to leave something exposed.
Right.
This is a normal size, like twin size blanket that defensive coordinators are going to have to try and cover up a giant, because like arms and legs and everything is going to be sticking out when you consider all of the weapons that USC has. It's really not fair.
Yeah, 100%. To go back to little nitpicks, if we want to get really nitpicky, really, really, really nitpicky, I think the only two things that I could nitpick about this game on offense for SC, the snaps have been an issue. You mentioned it, that Dedich had a little bit of a rough game.
That's where the fumble, turnover comes from.
The one turnover. But we've sort of seen it two games in a row now that they've got to get that sort of shored up for sure. But the other thing, the only drive in the first half in which SC does not score is the first six plays, SC gains first downs on the very first six plays. The second drive of the game, they get into Nevada territory, and then the drive stalls. First down is a deep shot. Doesn't hit.
Just flat out misses Brendan Rice, who is available for that pass.
Second down is another deep shot down the field, down the left side.
Which I thought was forced.
I thought it was forced too, which creates a third and long, which ends up having the sack on it.
Which was a coverage sack that Caleb should just dump it off to Marshawn Lloyd.
Right. And like I put on Twitter at the time, like, I think you can be critical of the second down throw and say that, you know, don't take that throw from Caleb shouldn't be looking at that throw because you don't need to go deep on second and 10. You need any sort of yardage to have a third manageable. At the same time, and this is why it's too nitpicky to actually nitpick it, at the same time, SC was getting so much separation with the receivers. You saw it later on the deep shot to Tosh Washington, which looked like it was almost the same play. Why wouldn't you take that shot? Like, SC was just completely getting, you know, such separation and manhandling Nevada's secondary. We all would have taken that shot if we were playing Madden. You know what I mean? And yes, the third and long situation that leads to the sack is not going to cost them against Nevada, and maybe it would against Utah. But when you have the ability to trust your playmakers, I see why you do it. Absolutely. Especially in a game that SC scores, what was it, 59 offensive points? Yeah. We're not going to nitpick that too much.
Yeah.
Defensively, SC, of course, holds Nevada to 14 points. We talked about it before.
Oh, I have one more real quick on offensive the nitpick.
Yeah, go for it.
I worry it's a little bit of a trend that USC does not close halves well on offense. It happened again this week that you have the fumble right before the half, and there's also just a drive that I think goes wrong right before the half. So just a little something to want to finish the half strong. That's all I would say.
Yeah, and by the way, shout out to Nick in the chat for calling the
USC special.
USC special,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you've been a listener way back in like 2015, we coined 2014-15, we coined the USC special, which is pretty much the deep shot on second down. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the deep shot on second down, but like the idea of there's a deep shot on first or second down, and maybe there's a run stuff involved.
Yeah.
Usually a run stuff on first down and a deep shot on second down, and then creates the third and long. Mm-hmm. That was the drive. The second drive for SC was a USC special, but there was one of those.
Yeah. Which
there wasn't 13 of them in the same game.
Yeah. That's an aberration, not a special at a certain point.
Yeah. It truly is special at this point.
In that sense. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
The last drive before the half is the bad snap fumble.
Mm-hmm.
And then the drive before that, they try the weird double pass thing with Mario Williams. And I think that sets up a little bit of a mini USC special variety where they just tried to do a trick play on first down. And
I don't even know
up,
how that play was supposed to develop.
It didn't look like it made it. Didn't. I don't know what the point of that was.
To the point that I almost don't know that it was a double pass.
It
looks like it. Like the way he drops back looks, everything says double pass.
If it wasn't.
But yet you look at everything else and I'm like, I don't know. Where was he supposed to look?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there wasn't like a dude streaking down deep. None of the other stuff made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it was too cute. And that was sort of, that's something to maybe keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. We've talked in the past about USC needs to win the middle eight. And that, that was, you know, something that didn't quite go off.
Yeah. You can afford not to win the middle eight when you score 59 offensive points.
Yeah.
But again, when you play the,
you still want to win the middle
teams,
eight.
You want to. Yeah. Make sure that you're winning the middle eight. Talk about the defense. Those 14 points, again, we talked about in the CarCast, half of Nevada's yards came on three plays. So the good side there, so the consistency that we talked about, SC really shut down the run. Sean Dollars did nothing. Ashton Hayes did nothing in the Nevada run game. There were a bunch of receiving yards in the fourth quarter, literally garbage time. AJ Bianco, the backup quarterback, came in to throw 129 yards. But, you know, Alicia, in the rewatch, what was your takeaway on defense?
My takeaway on defense, and you all should understand that I am saying this from a place of recognizing that this was against Nevada. My takeaway on defense is I suspect that Alex Grinch would tell you that this is his ideal defensive game. This game was very much what we have talked about in the past, philosophically, I mean, not necessarily in terms of execution or anything like that. But in the past, we've talked about how the sort of the Big 12 mentality of everybody's going to put up points. So our goal is to maybe risk giving up the big play because we're going to cause so much havoc that mm-hmm. we're going to push you into mistakes and we're going to take advantage. We're just going to outscore you. Now, obviously, it's Nevada and it's not a shootout and all that kind of stuff. But the philosophy that Alex Grinch holds really reveals itself on a second watch of this game for the defense, because the third down stops that USC was getting, like, to me, that's exactly the exotic coverages and exotic blitzes and the whole thing, all the stuff we were complaining about last week, like, it goes right in this game, and it's almost like a results justify the means situation.
Right.
Where
I mentioned that in the CarCast.
Yeah. I have a bunch of third downs in my rewatch notes highlighted about how, like, the pockets just absolutely overrun.
Mm-hmm.
So on the second Nevada drive, after they've scored the touchdown because Damani can't make the play one-on-one, the third down, they get into a third down. The pocket is overrun by a four-man rush. He sends Tackett Curtis on a delayed blitz. And
Curtis
then,
Tackett does sound like
I know, because I have Curtis written down. And because I alternate whether or not I put a first or a last name in these notes. It's sort of weird. And then Jamil Muhammad ends up running down the quarterback and getting the stop. The next drive, they get into another third down play, and again, the pocket collapses completely. But on this one, Brendan Lewis is able to get off a throw to an open receiver who Zion Branch is a bit lucky that pass didn't ultimately get caught because it was sort of a vulnerable thing. But in the end, what happened there is that Bear Alexander and the defensive line just absolutely just collapse the pocket and get to the quarterback. And sort of this is the idea of the aggressiveness paying off, that you're so aggressive and everybody gets there to the point where the quarterback just like can see where he wants to throw the ball, but he can't execute it because Bear Alexander is literally throwing an offensive lineman into his face. Right. Later on, there's some third downs where, again, it's just, they're letting the four-man rush go. They're sending a linebacker on a delayed blitz. Those blitzes are getting home this time, maybe in part because I think that the USC's edge defenders were, to me, it looked like they were slightly more disciplined in terms of not, like, when the pocket was collapsing, it was collapsing in sort of an orderly fashion so that it was opening up gaps for the blitzing linebacker to get through, where I think last week what you had was that the pocket was collapsing so much that it was sort of like going like a pancake and then creating a running lane for the quarterback to get out of. And in this case, it was more like an implosion where it like that. Mm-hmm. So like that was all going well. And I think that you get a lot of stops going, doing that. You are able to generate a lot of third down stops. The problem is that it's Nevada. Will your defensive line be able to do this against Oregon or Washington or Utah or Notre Dame? That's a big question. But like philosophically, you can see what the idea is. And when it works very well. It's just, it's just Nevada.
Right. Because against Nevada, you're going to have all those man beaters go in your favor. Single play beaters that you're physical beats. And that you're getting to go in your favor. And if you win your physical matchups, your one-on-ones, every single player, you're going to get in the backfield. You're going to cause havoc. You're going to force mistakes. And Nick in the chat says, I think part of Grinch's philosophy is to stop the offense fast or let them score fast. Either way, the USC offense needs the ball back ASAP. I agree with this, with the exception of one point here. I don't think it's stop the offense fast or let them score. I don't think it's that overt. I think it's strictly be so aggressive that you hope to force them into mistakes more often than not.
Yeah.
And if you let up the score, if you do allow a score, it's not the end of the world because you have that offense. But I don't think that it's as simply as let them score fast or do a three and out fast. Like, I don't think it's that cut and dry, but we're saying the same thing, right? Like,
yeah,
we're speaking the same language here. And that's really what it looks like. And I think that when you play against a quarterback like Brendan Lewis, who I do not think is good, I think Brendan Lewis is not a good quarterback.
Well, okay.
I think he made a lot of mistakes in this game where he kind of fell into the trap where he gets under pressure and he backs up, or he gets under pressure and he runs into more pressure, or he gets under pressure and he does the things where he allows the defense to really take advantage of him. And against Nevada, that makes the SC defense look completely great with all the aggressiveness. I worry that those mistakes that Brendan Lewis was creating is not going to happen when it comes down to Michael Penix in the backfield and Bo Nix in the backfield, because those guys have had so much experience. It'll be interesting what happens when it's Shredder Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have much experience playing against FBS level defenses.
Yeah.
He's certainly talented with his arm and his legs, and he could, you know, be a danger that way, but he doesn't necessarily have the experience, so we still have to see more of that. But
it comes down to how much composure the opposing quarterback is able to hold.
Yes.
And how quickly the opposing offensive coordinator recognizes the gaps in sort of the aggressiveness, because
it took Nevada like four or five drives for them to realize that they could try that misdirection.
Yeah. That misdirection was going to be the way to get some, mm-hmm. something going. And there will be a lot of teams in the Pac-12 that USC faces who don't need an invite to use misdirection. So like that is going to be something that USC needs to be conscious of. But sort of what we saw against Nevada was, like I said, like, I think that this would be the blueprint for USC every week if Alex Grinch had his way.
Right.
The problem is it puts so much, it puts so much emphasis on depending on the opposing quarterback making the mistakes. And the interesting thing is, like, 10 years ago, I would have told you that's absolutely the way you do it. 10 years ago, I would have said the vast majority of quarterbacks that USC was going to face on a regular schedule would crumble under the pressure of a defense that is aggressive like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably would have been mostly correct. The problem is that this year, number one, quarterback play, quarterback development for college has accelerated to an incredible degree, to the point where the worst quarterbacks in the Pac-12 are dudes who have been training with quarterback coaches since they were children, right, and sort of know all the tricks of the mm-hmm. trade and all of that kind
of
stuff.
Which this is a side tangent I really don't have time to go on, but like, isn't it amazing that every quarterback in America at the college level has been trained since they were an 8-year-old to be a quarterback?
Yeah.
And yet, in the world, at the highest level, in the NFL, there is, like, truly three or four truly elite quarterbacks and maybe, like, eight good ones. And, like, the drop-off after that is massive.
But that's because they're playing NFL defenses have so much athleticism that they... It's very difficult to beat those. Even the worst NFL defense has incredible athleticism on it that USC could only dream of.
You'd think there'd be like an abundance of all these quarterbacks, and there still isn't. That's wild.
Of the truly, truly elite. But at the college level,
right?
College
level, there's plenty of capable ones because the offensive schemes are putting so many quarterbacks in position to succeed.
Yes.
And to take advantage of defenses.
And that's the issue I see with a defensive philosophy in 2023, when on your schedule, Shedeur Sanders might be the fifth best quarterback you're going to face this year. And that's right. with all due respect to Shador Sanders, who was absolutely outstanding against TCU.
Yeah.
And I was watching that performance going like, okay, TCU's defense isn't good, but like, it's not like USC's defense is that good either.
Right.
So Shador Sanders could absolutely do the same thing to USC's defense. Mm-hmm. And Shador Sanders isn't even a top five quarterback in the Pac-12. Well, at this stage,
this is the crazy part. Is you look at SC's schedule. This is going to be the biggest gauntlet of quarterback play ever. Like, SC will have never played a run of good quarterbacks like they will this year.
It's astounding.
You have to take advantage of these next 2 weeks. These next 2 weeks against
Ashton Daniels from Stanford.
From Stanford, yes. Who is, you know, probably the worst quarterback in the conference just because he's so green. And then what Rashad at ASU is so green also.
Yeah.
Like, you have to take advantage of those two, because after that, geez, buckle up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious to see if they can. I think this was a very good performance to build off of. Before we move on, I want to give a shout out to players like Shane Lee and Rajon Davis, who I think really, really stepped up. I think that the defensive front really looked outstanding, and in an ideal world, they're able to do this similar things to a Pac-12 level offensive line. So that'll be sort of interesting to find out. I thought outside of Damani Jackson and that the one-on-one he gave up, more often than not, USC's corners, or at least the ones who were, we expect to be heavily involved in the defense, did well to break up passes when they were put in one-on-one situations. Sierra Wright had a few breakups. Kalen Bullock was playing center field for a little while. So there's a lot that on individual levels, I think there's a lot to work with on this defense. It's very clear there's a lot more to work with on this defense than there was last year. I just continue to worry that the aggression, because even in this game, for instance, USC's front four was having their way with the Nevada offensive line, and still Grinch very rarely let the front four just cook on their own. He was sending blitzes more often than not. So, you know, I think there's still balance to be found, but Grinch is going to do his thing.
Yeah. 100%. Let's go to the poll that we put in the chat here on YouTube. We said, how satisfied were you with USC's blowout of Nevada? 50% of the Rotbots have put very satisfied. 41% say satisfied. And 9% said that they order milk with dinner. So there you go. All right. Let's get to the over-under. Shall we? We have a very fun game of over under that we have to get to here.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I gotta take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm gonna do an under here.
All right. Last week, both of us were 3-3 going into the week. Let's get to your first over under for the Nevada game. You said over under 1.5 third and long conversions for the Nevada Wolfpack. San Jose State was 3 of 6 on third and longs, meaning 9+ yards according to Stat Broadcast. Alicia, I took the under. You took the over because of that. Which is the answer? It was under. Nevada was 0 of 2 on third and longs on Saturday. Look at the progress.
Yeah, and those were sort of what I was talking about, where on third and long, USC pinned their ears back and went after the quarterback, and the quarterback wasn't able to make plays the way that I think Chevin Cordero was able to make plays in week zero.
Yeah, I thought they got to Brendan Lewis and made him make mistakes on third downs. On top of that, they also seemingly had fewer running lanes, which I think is important too.
Yeah,
it wasn't just the physical wins that they were getting.
It was
the physical wins, but not just solely
but it was,
that.
It was noticeable how much more disciplined the players on the edge were.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's go to the next one. My first over-under was over-under 180.5. Zachariah Branch, all-purpose yards. I was optimistic with this line. You were not. You said under on 180.5 all-purpose yards, and it was under. He had 63.
Yeah, he
22 of that came on the first drive with a touchdown pass.
And he almost broke one or two of those returns, so he almost got close there. But it was sort of what I expected in that after he was the featured receiver at times in week zero, we saw USC put more of an emphasis on getting the ball in Mario Williams' hands, on getting the ball to Taj Washington and Dorian mm-hmm. Singer and all of the other guys. There's just too many guys who need to eat. You can't expect any one receiver to have back-to-back big games the way that Branch had in week zero.
Yeah, 100%. He wasn't the big focus on offense like he seemed to be in week zero. We'll see what that has in store for week two, game three against Stanford on Saturday. Let's get to your next one. You set the line at over-under 9.5 USC pass catchers. The Trojans had 12 against San Jose State in week one. Last year, SC had 11 against Rice, but then followed it up with only 8 against Stanford. So you put the line at 9.5. I was very bullish on this. I took a big over. I was super confident. And Alicia, it was over. It's 14. SC had 14 different pass catchers. And we're going to play a quick game. Without looking, how many of those 14 can you name? In about 30 seconds here.
Okay.
Go for it.
Mario Williams, Zach Branch, Taj Washington, Brendan Rice, Dorian Singer, Deuce Robinson, Marshawn Lloyd,
mm-hmm.
Kyron Hudson, Makai Lemon,
9,
Blake McCree,
10.
So I need 4 more.
Four more.
15
seconds.
Austin Jones.
No, incorrect.
Darwin Barlow.
Barlow, yes.
Barlow, yes.
That's 11. Three more.
Quentin Joyner.
Yes. Two more.
So I need two more.
Two more. 2 seconds. You are missing, let's see, who's on this list? Michael Jackson
Jacoby
the
Lane
third?
And Michael Jackson
and
the third.
And Jacoby Lane.
Yeah. I should have gotten Michael Jackson the third.
Pretty solid.
I really should have because I started by naming touchdowns in my head. That's my bad.
I think the Michael Jackson the third touchdown pass is one of the more forgettable ones, but shouldn't be because I thought the play was just executed so perfectly. You know what it was? They executed the play too perfectly that it was forgettable. like too perfectly that it wasn't like wasn't the crazy block on it. Wasn't the crazy scramble. Like it was just too perfectly executed that like they made it look routine.
It was how the play was designed to do. It was an
RPO.
It was an RPO. The linebacker bit on the RPO that opened up the space in the middle for an easy touchdown to Michael Jackson III. What can you do?
What can you do? All right. My next over under was JJ3. I said over under 3.5 John Jackson the third catches. Put that line high. You thought I was crazy because he only had 5 career catches at SC for a total of 42 yards. I said, but couldn't you see a world in which he had a great drive in the second half, the fourth quarter in garbage time or something? And you're like, you weren't confident. You took the under. It's locked me into the over. At least he had a drive. He had a drive in that fourth quarter.
And
what
was
the
result?
3 catches for 52 yards.
Mm-hmm.
All on that one drive.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was a little close there, but ultimately, like I said, Nevada doesn't have a lot of high volume receiving.
Yeah. But by the way, we talked about the playmaker to look out for was Delvon Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
1 catch for 2 yards.
Well,
1 catch for 2 yards.
He also had his helmet launched off of his head.
Well, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Jamal Bell, 8 catches, 121 yards. But yeah, Delvon Campbell,
Not the guy.
Not a big factor in this game.
Yeah.
For Nevada. Let's go to the next one. It was over under. You said 1.5 for Malik Brown touches. This, of course, was a big one in the over under game this week. I was confident, and I took the over. You locked into the under, but everybody inserts Oprah right here. We're all winners. We are all winners because we're taking it off the board. It is a win for everybody. We're paying out the over and the under for a couple of reasons. We were not going to, you know, I saw that we got tweets about it and comments. After he was on the scout team of like, oh, but he's on the scout team now. Should we take it off? Like all that kind of stuff. And we didn't think that it was worthy of taking it out because that was part of the risk, right? Like that was part of the risk of like we know that he only got in at the very end of the San Jose State game, so that was like inherently what the question was, if he would see time at all. Well, then he ended up not suiting up, so it just made it more it made more fair sense, I guess, to
the spirit, to just
strike in.
The spirit of the question was how much would USC choose to use him?
Yes.
Not whether or not he would take himself off the board. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with the, yeah.
Yeah. So we both get a win there, which leads us to the last one. And everybody gets a win. Everybody playing along. Let's go to the last one. I said over or under 1.5 Nevada turnovers. By the way, in the preview episode, for some reason, we skipped this.
We absolutely skipped this.
I don't know how we skipped this, but we did.
Yeah.
The rationale was that Nevada had only turned it over 6 times in 6 road games all of last year, and SC did not force a turnover against San Jose State in week 0, which is why I put it at 1.5. It was 1. So you took the under. I took the, which locks me into the over, and it was under. It was 1. SC got a strip sack, which turned into a fumble, scoop and score.
Yeah, good play by Elijah.
Braylon Shelby?
By Braylon Shelby, that's, yeah. Yes, I'm sorry.
There's a lot of Elijahs.
Yeah, Braylon Shelby.
Wrong freshman.
Wrong freshman.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was...
And
it was
Stanley Tefo walked in the end zone.
Got the touchdown, so that was good. I think this defense is not going to be the turnover luck is just going to revert to a sort of more conventional,
mm-hmm.
and one turnover is much more standard than 2.
Yeah, I would think so. Let's go to the weekly scores. You went 4-2 this week. I went 3-3. And so now it's going to be that thing where you have a one game advantage because of the Malik Brown thing, because those were strike from the record. We both get a win there.
Because of the Malik Brown thing?
Yeah.
I had the under on that, sir.
Right. You were correct. And yeah. But I get the win also. So yes. Like we're.
Yeah. So
instead of me being 2-4,
yeah, unless,
and we
instead and of having you us being two behind,
us
yeah.
having an inverted thing.
Gotcha. Yeah,
you're right. It does work in my favor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely works in your favor.
Yeah. I'll hail the really Brown decision solely for my over under thing.
Yeah.
Let's see how the season standings are going. And you have a 1-game lead now, 7-5 for you through 2 weeks. I am 6-6. Both of us bowl eligible. That, of course, the most important thing. Let's go and see how the Rotbots are doing. Were there any winners? Drum roll. Yes. There were a bunch of you. Topher Garcia, Dave in Orange County, Yoni, Tyrone Trojan, and Vince in San Diego. All of you, 6-0. A perfect 6-0 this week. But Alicia, we have to save our big applause for Vince in San Diego. Because when you look at the season leaders, he is the only person to go 6-0 in both week 0 and week 1.
That is impressive. That's impressive.
Well done. That is how you do it, Vince. Vince and SD. Maybe it's San Dimas. Is he in San Dimas? It could be in San
Dimas. Does San Dimas refer to themselves as SD?
I'm sure they do. Vince and San Dimas, 12-0, is first place.
What I'm seeing here is that the strategy should be name in a two-letter abbreviation. See, if Jordan from Canada was Jordan in CA, then maybe he'd be up there.
I think Jordan's in Ontario. So Jordan and O-N.
Jordan and O-N. There you go.
Yeah. What's your favorite Canadian province when it comes to postal codes?
I do not have one, to be quite honest.
I think Quebec is up there. QC.
QC?
QC, yeah.
Quality control.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. NB for New Brunswick isn't bad either. But QC, I think, looks cool. Yeah, LA Fred in the chat. Vincent San Diego, nicely done. Yeah. Cigar says, the only thing in San Dimas is raging waters. This is true. And Vince, apparently, maybe.
That is very much the only reason I know anything about San Dimas. Yeah,
so that's where we are on Over Under. Big shout out to everyone who was able to participate. We appreciate you guys as always. So we'll see what happens later on this week. USC and Stanford locking horns on Saturday. But let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's get to the mailbag. If you're joining us live on YouTube, be sure to pop in your questions if you haven't already. If you have, we've been starring them so we can come back to them and talk to them, talk about them here at this point in the episode. Let's go to a question we got from PDX and a whole bunch of other letters that look like a passcode generated by LastPass. We'll just go with PDX. How would you make your linebacker depth chart after two games so far? For me, this is super easy, but I wonder how others feel. I would go 1, Gentry, 2, Davis or Cobb, and 3, Lee, and then 4, Curtis.
I think it's very clear that Rajon Davis should be playing over Tackett Curtis at this point in their careers. I saw enough from Rajon Davis in this game. I saw enough from Shane Lee in this game too, that, you know, and it's nothing against Tackett Curtis as a talent. He's just a true freshman who is out there still learning the playbook, still learning what to recognize and how to execute and everything that needs to happen as you develop. He should not be playing primary reps for USC until he gets a little bit more, just a little bit more experience, a little bit more understanding of what he needs to do. I think realistically, it's Gentry and Cobb. Not getting to see Cobb in this game was really disappointing because we saw so many other guys after first game mistakes go out and correct them very clearly and get the job done in week two. We didn't get to see that from Cobb. Our last impression was sort of a hit or miss performance in week zero. I still think he's up there with Gentry, but if we have Gentry and Cobb as 1 and 2 or as 1A and 1B, then I think Davis and Lee are very much 2A and 2B, and then Curtis is an option down below them. But if Rajon Davis didn't earn playing time based on his performance against Nevada, then I don't know what more he could possibly do.
Then they're deciding to go with a smaller rotation then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with PDX. I think that's the pecking order there. The other thing, yeah, it's two positions. There's two inside spots there, which gives you a little bit more flexibility. I thought Lee really, yeah, you can put him third string of those spots if you want to rank him that way. But like, I thought Lee absolutely showed, you know, some merit there, especially when there had been concerns about him last year, right? We know that he stepped up big in the UCLA game, had a big pick, and had a couple other big moments against UCLA. But you wanted to see more from from Shane Lee, the Alabama transfer. And yeah, he looked good in against Nevada. We'll see what happens in week two, game three. God, I can't wait for like 2 weeks from now when
the bye resets everything.
Everything will align. It's going to be wonderful. And then it'll align for the rest of the season. How great is that? Like game 10 and week 10 will be the same number. Oh, it's going to be great. Let's get a question from Lamont. After my rewatches, I came away more impressed with the D. My only gripe was, what the hell was Anthony Beavers doing on that bomb play? Can you guess what happened there?
We didn't get a good look at it. The replay didn't give us, they never gave us the angle where we could see Beavers the whole time.
Yeah.
We basically saw the start of the play where I think you can barely see him in the corner. And then the other replay they showed us, by the time they get over to the receiver, he's already out of frame. So my guess is maybe he just didn't realize that his responsibility was that receiver. Maybe he bit on something else. I can't remember off the top of my head right now if there was some sort of misdirection or play action or anything or RPO sort of thing that maybe he bit on and that put him behind the eight ball in terms of the coverage. But there's a conspiracy going on in the chat right now about bullying me into making pancakes for dinner. So
yeah, I only say this because you actively look for reasons to make pancakes.
I mean, I'm not
being sexist.
I'm not gonna say that I am against the idea of breakfast for dinner. Pancakes, waffles. I could be convinced. I could definitely be convinced.
Yeah. There's a big chat going on about San Dimas, by the way. but to go back to the Anthony Beavers thing, here's a question for you. This is just dumb Michael P. Brain stuff. Where is the delineation for you? If you are going to have a corner get burned on a deep ball, and I realize that this is a dumb question.
And I want to say Beavers was playing as a safety there.
If you're going to get burned as any sort of DB,
yeah,
on a deep ball, would you rather get burned by three steps because you were on the back foot, the guy's faster, he made a move that you couldn't react to, whatever it is, you just like straight up just burned? Or would you rather get burned in the way that Domani Jackson did, where you're in position to make the play and you don't make the play? I see merits for both. One of the merits of like, you just get burned. Okay, you got burned. You just got burned straight out. Like, you don't worry about it. Like, amnesia, you get back out there, whatever. Take your L, move on, whatever. The one where you are in position to make the play and don't make the play, I almost feel like is more soul crushing.
I would much rather get Torrin Harris than let a receiver catch a pass with nobody near him.
Torrin Harris is a verb. That's a usage. We haven't used that in a while.
Yeah.
It was a Torrin Harris.
For those who are new, it's the idea that the DB is in position. He's there to make the play. He just doesn't make a play on the ball, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
The receiver makes the catch, even though the coverage up until the point where you have to break up the pass was fine.
Right.
Yeah. I would rather up until the
moment of that the ball arrives is textbook, and then you get to the point where it's like it didn't go through. Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of the reason, you know, you can say it's not textbook because part of that is, you know, whether or not Domani Jackson turns around quicker enough or whatnot. I do think there is some sort of some almost too much focus on whether or not the DB turns around. Mm-hmm. Because.
Well, there's another play later on where
he doesn't turn around. He gets credit for the PBU.
Yeah, because he reads the receiver reads the receiver's hands and gets his hand in there to break up the pass. That's that's all you got to do. I mean, yes, is it better form and give you more opportunity to make a play, like make an interception or whatever? You get your head around, track the ball, all that kind of stuff. Yes, absolutely.
Right.
But if you're in a position where you're chasing, you can still absolutely get the job done, make the play if if you are reading the receiver well enough to smack the ball out of his hands.
Right.
And that's where Damani failed in that instance, and he did it later. And
you know what it is?
Tier Wright did it a couple times too.
Not turning around and giving up a big play is the same thing as pimping a non-homer to me. Whereas, like, if you just crush a ball, we're talking like it's a 108 miles an hour off the bat, and you think you just crushed that thing and you pimped it, but like it's at Wrigley and it's April, so there's 28 mile an hour wind coming off the lake right in from center, and you just hit it into the teeth of the wind and it doesn't go anywhere. Like, it's understandable why you pimped it. The optics are bad, but like, I get it. And it's the same thing with like you don't turn around. Like, yeah, the optics look bad, but like, if you make the play, nobody says anything. You pimp the homer that actually is gone, that you crushed, everyone's loving you for pimping it. You know what I mean? You know.
Yeah.
Result bias. It's a thing.
That's very much a thing, especially with DBs.
We're all guilty of it. DBs, yes. Especially, I think, have a tough job because so much of the stuff is result bias.
Yeah, which is why we get mad at DBs for doing the like cross thing when it was just the receiver dropping the ball.
That's funny though.
It is.
It's legitimately funny.
It is, yeah. Or doing the Jack Jones, as we like to call it.
Well, Greg Johnson was great.
Greg
for
Johnson
that too.
Was really big on that one too.
Yeah, the long drop on third down or. There's the big tackle when you give up a third and 18, but you make a nice tackle and celebrate the tackle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way. Tim in LA popped in the YouTube chat and then had to pop out. He couldn't stay, but he says, do you think some of last year's turnover luck hid some of the defensive deficiencies? I know this is overly simplified, but last year's defense was basically turnover bust. Yes. 1,000% yes.
Yes.
But I would also argue that that's what the defense is trying to do at the same time.
The defense is designed to sort of game the whole turnover luck thing, because the idea is to put so much pressure on the offense that you force them into turnovers. So it makes it about like creating your own luck kind of situation. The problem is that, yeah, the defense, when the turnovers were happening, it's all results. Bias. It's when you get the turnover, everything feels fine, and when you don't, everything feels like the world is falling down. I think the bigger issue that I had is that in the first half of the season, while it was certainly an element of the turnover or bust, the busts were not as busty. Like, they were not as clearly
not as voluptuous.
Yeah. Like, they were more forgivable, I think. They were more just like, you in a one-on-one situation, you gave up the play because it just didn't work.
Right.
Where by the end of the season, it was collectively incapable of making tackles, taking miserably bad angles, being in the wrong spot. Like, not just busts, but like actual detrimental play on defense.
Yeah, I think so. The turnovers cover up some of that stuff, and you want both, right? You want to be able to create a million turnovers, and you also not want to have the bust. And if you do both those things, you're called a Pete Carroll defense. You're called if you do it on special teams too, you're called like it's Beaver ball, right? Like, that's what you want to do. You got to be able to shore up the bust a little bit. And if you sacrifice some of the turnovers, that's okay in my mind.
And you have to be able to get a stop if you're not getting a turnover. Because that was the bigger issue in the second half of the season. It was either you got the turnover or they score a touchdown. And in the first half of the season, it was more of either you get the turnover or there's a 50-50 chance that they score a touchdown. And like, the difference between those two things is quite drastic. And you have to be able to prove that if the turnover doesn't come, you can still get off the field by other means. And USC wasn't able to do that at the end of the year. Certainly not against Tulane.
Yeah. Going back to the DB thing, Jimmy in the chat says there's a technique to being a DB that's not being taught. They need to put their closest hand to the receiver's shoulder, then turn and look for the ball. I think the defense should keep everything in front and play less man and rally to the ball. I don't disagree. I think that there should be more of an element of zone, especially on third and long. You know, mix in things. One of the things I thought was really good, talking about zone coverage in this game, was just Kalen Bullock being a hawk and going to where he needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really playing center game. Field the way that you want to see him play center field. I think there's sometimes we're a little over aggressive with the safeties.
Yes. Well, that's what I was going to say.
There was one of those plays that he makes a great play, Kalen Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
It's because Max Williams like has this delayed blitz on third and long that it was so delayed that he was never going to get to the backfield.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it was like planned that like it well, was it so delayed that his intention was like the purpose was to take away the quarterback draw or something. Maybe.
But even on the Damani Jackson, on the big play he gives up, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong here, just from my memory, on that play, I think a safety is sent on a blitz, or a safety is sent, vacates that area and leaves Damani Jackson in that one-on-one situation where the quarterback recognizes, like, I have that one-on-one, I'm just going to toss it up for him.
Right.
And part of that is, again, the aggressiveness of the safeties that... You playing fast and loose with your safeties, like you are putting your cornerbacks in positions where they can get burned. Whereas if you kept things more conventional and simple, you might have had safety help over the top, and maybe either A, Damani gives up that catch, but the tackle is made immediately, or B, the safety is able to help out and prevent the catch from even happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all something to think about. Cigar in the chat says, is Sark going to pull off the upset at Bama this week? To which Alien 55 says, I doubt it. Saban won't lose to a guy with a cutie pie doll hairdo. that's a phrase I never thought I'd say.
Yeah, Sark is a kept man at this point. His wife makes sure that he has a haircut and style options.
Haircuts are fun.
Yeah, that's fine. To answer the question, though, absolutely not. No.
Last year was their chance to beat them.
Do right? not bet on anybody against Saban in Tuscaloosa. No, absolutely not.
Yeah. I wouldn't either unless it's ULM and it's 2007, maybe. Randy says, did we learn anything from the Oregon State San Jose State game? The Beavers, big winners in that game.
I
think it was 42-17. San Jose State literally scored on like the last play of the game.
Yeah.
So realistically, 42-10-ish. 42-17 was obviously how it finished. But
San Jose State scored 3 points in the first three quarters of that game.
Yeah.
What we learned is... that number one, it is very dangerous to compare one game to another in terms of like how you beat a team. USC and Oregon State are drastically different teams. Oregon State was the best defense in the Pac-12 last year,
right?
USC was the best offense in the Pac-12 last year, and the way that USC and Oregon State set out to beat teams is very, very different. So don't go overboard in a comparison of that game. But I do think we can glean something from that game, which is it's always difficult in the first few weeks of the season. You do not know how good an opposing team is going to be because half of what we're basing things on are projections and last year's results, right? So like we lean heavily on SP Plus. SP Plus is a flawed system in week 0 and week 1 and week 2 and week basically everything through 6, which is when I think he no longer is factoring in last year's results. It's flawed because so much of it is based on what you did last year, but you are a different team this year. You have different personnel. You have different, mixes of players and chemistry and play calling and all these things, right? So I came out of week 0 wondering, okay, maybe there's a chance that San Jose State is a better offense than we were giving them credit for when we were doing our previews. Maybe San Jose State has something going for them. Maybe Chevin Cordero is really going to elevate them to a different level of an offense. And I think what we learned in that game is San Jose State may still have a perfectly acceptable Mountain West offense, but it certainly does not have an offense that is capable of putting up points on a good defense. And Oregon State has a good defense, and USC aspires to a good defense and has a long way to go before they prove that they do have a good defense based on the results.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at it and say that, you know, comparatively, like in the comparative scores game, SC beating San Jose State 56-28 at home, and Oregon State going on the road to get a 42-17 win in San Jose. West Texas Mike in the chat says, no, 17, that last TD count. So, okay, 42-17. That, you know, the comparative scores don't look favorably for SC, absolutely. At the same time, it's game one versus game two, which probably, again, more favorable to Oregon State for doing that in game one for
Oregon
them.
State had tape of San Jose State to prepare for, too. Like,
they did.
Oregon State knew that Chevin Cordero was going to take advantage of their running lanes if he gave them.
Right.
You know, there's all, again, it's hard to compare any of these things.
Yeah, it's hard to compare. It definitely looks good for Oregon State. And if it wasn't for, like, you know, I think it's SC can feel thankful that they don't have to face Oregon State. Oregon State this year, we know that SC struggled against them last year, needed a miracle play by Brett Nealon to push Caleb Williams over the line for a fourth down conversion on the last drive of the game, leading to the miraculous touchdown drive there to win the game. We know SC needed that. They needed to completely pull that win out of their ass. At the same time, if you played Oregon State, you would also play Washington State, and you would take the Oregon State and Washington State flop for Washington, Oregon. You would take that in a heartbeat. So that's, you know, worth considering there. But Oregon State looks like they're going to be a really tough team. Every team in the Pac-12 does. This was such a great week for the conference. 13-0, it's the conference. Everybody's 1-0 with the exception of SC, who's 2-0. And like I said in the carcast, I legitimately think through one game, you can look at it and say that every team looks as good or better than you expected them to look.
Mm-hmm.
It's early. It's only one game. One game doesn't mean a lot. Teams have had good week ones and then do nothing. So take that for what it's worth. But every team started on the right foot, which I think is very good for the conference.
Which is not the norm for the Pac-12 either.
Right.
You're supposed
Utah and Stanford notoriously have been teams that even when they were at their peak dominating the conference not started well in week one.
And we've seen Washington State, we've seen ASU, we've seen Arizona, we've seen all these teams have hiccups early in the season against teams they have no business having a hiccup against. And around the country this week, we saw teams like Texas Tech lose to Wyoming, and we saw... you know, teams get
weird
humbled.
Road game though.
Weird, very weird road game, but
having driven through Laramie, like it's literally the middle of nowhere. I will say the drive to Laramie, unbelievable. I recommend it to everybody. You go up this mountain where you're like at 10,000 feet on an interstate, and you're like, how is this possible? And there's like this statue this Abraham Lincoln monument and there's a sign, you're like at 11,000 feet, whatever it is. You're like, how am I this high on an interstate? What? I'm like
higher than I hike at the highest peaks in Southern California.
Yeah, like it's wild. It's and all of insane. A sudden you 20 minutes later, after going downhill for like 3,000 miles over the next like 15 miles or whatever, you're in Laramie at a lowly 7,000 feet. And Laramie just looks like it's on the prairie all of a sudden. But it's still 7,000 feet.
Yeah.
It's wild. Recommend. Wyoming is cool. It's a cool place. And you get to go to Taco John's. If you go to Cheyenne, there's Taco John's, the home of Taco John's. Which I liked, unlike the Doughboys. I get it. The Doughboys didn't like it, but I do, okay? The taco olays, I mean the potato olays are good.
Okay. I didn't get to try these things, so I have no opinion.
No, they're good. All right. Lamont says, question: with the new playoff format coming, that will force teams to schedule actual competitive games, especially the SEC teams known for cooking their books?
Absolutely not. It'll do the reverse.
I think that's the theory, but I do see the inverse happening too.
Absolutely not. No, not when you, as an SEC team, now have Texas and Oklahoma in your conference. Yeah. Not as a Big Ten team when you have USC and Washington in your conference. No, your conference schedule has gotten more difficult because of conference expansion. Your incentive to schedule difficult out of conference games has never been lower. Especially for the teams like USC and Oregon and Washington and all those who have a lot of travel. Now your only impetus is to have as many local home games as you possibly can. You need to maximize your local home games. So I think we will see less competitive out of conference scheduling. But that doesn't mean that has to be a bad thing necessarily. We will get really great matchups in the playoff, in the 12-team playoff, and we will continue to see random upsets like Wyoming over Texas Tech and all of those kinds of things, even with, you know, stay used to USC playing Nevada and San Jose State.
Yeah, 100%. If it wasn't for the uptick in conference schedule difficulty, I could see it. But you look at SC's schedule, you're going to be going on the road potentially to play Ohio State, and maybe you got a schedule where it's not inconceivable that you have to play on the road in the same season. Mm-hmm. Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State all in the same season.
Yeah. And then you go to the Big Ten title game.
And Notre Dame still exists.
Yeah.
And then you're going to say that SC in that same season is going to be willing to you know, have a non-con game against Arkansas? Like, I don't see it.
Next year, USC plays, as Kenny in the chat pointed out, USC plays LSU next year.
Right.
That matchup doesn't benefit either of those teams in the long run.
It does not. And I know that it's been long enough they could have probably gotten out of it after the Big Ten stuff. Mm-hmm. And they would have gotten into it with the knowing everything with how the Big Ten situation came to be and the LSU game. I get that, but I don't think that's going to be a norm thing going forward.
Well, and as West Texas Mike points out in the chat, Alabama's future schedules have Wisconsin, West Virginia, Notre Dame, and Ohio State on them. Yeah, and I would not be surprised if they tried to get out of half of those.
Right.
By one way or another. I think a lot of this, the scheduling philosophy changed, but remember, the scheduling philosophy is like at least 5 years behind the times, because you're scheduling them out that far ahead. So unless it's a push for like money incentives in terms of playing, you know, the Camping World kickoff kind of game, because they're going to, you know, pay you a ton of money to play on Sunday night in week one. I just think that schools will figure out that their conference schedules are hard enough. And with a 12-team playoff, you're going to get in either way. You don't need to add an extra loss to your schedule potentially if you don't have to.
Yeah. 100%. Let's go to a question we got from Steven. Question: bacon or sausage? The answer is neither, of course.
No, the answer is both, but sausage is my preference.
We had a bacon taste test for me last Thanksgiving. And And I will am willing to admit, good bacon, meaning quality, high quality bacon, I'm not overly opposed to in the point where I would say, like, this is horrendous and I don't like this. It's also nothing I will ever seek out. I don't like the smoky taste, which is the irony.
Well, bacon is the smoky. Irony. You just got to find the non-smokier.
No, that's valid. And that's why I liked the Applewood one or whatever. But like the irony is that like I love Texas barbecue and I love smoked brisket. But smoked brisket to me doesn't taste like smokiness. And I think the answer to that is like two things. I don't like ham because I don't like the aftertaste of ham and it has a little hammy smoky aftertaste. I never have liked that ever. And bacon has that same aftertaste. And I also do not like smoked turkey lunch meat, and I think that's fake liquid smoke taste.
Yeah, liquid smoke is not good.
Yeah,
I am a very anti liquid smoke, and I am somewhat sensitive to smoky things. But I like I don't mind an applewood smoked bacon or a smoked hickory smoked like a turkey, sliced turkey or whatever. It's fine. It's not my favorite flavor, but it's fine.
Yeah. Nick in the chat, by the way, says that Taco John's has absolutely nothing on Del Taco. That's valid. Yeah. Del Taco, better than Taco John's. Taco John's, not as bad as I thought it was going to be, which is, I think, why I liked it. I think my expectations are just so low. Jimmy says, thoughts on the linebackers pass rushing in non-blitzing situations seems to happen on every obvious pass play.
Jimmy, I noticed that as well, and I think that I would like to see Alex Grinch cool his jets a little bit and not feel like he has to send a blitz on every time he thinks there's going to be pass. Like, it's especially when Bear Alexander and that line are getting the penetration that they're getting naturally. Like, let the dudes cook. Give it a try.
Yeah,
give them a chance, and then adjust as the game goes. If it's clear that your front is not winning their battles to give you enough pressure, then start sending those blitzes. Don't just preemptively assume like, well, we're not going to win the battle, so we just got to send a linebacker on a delayed blitz every single time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's something you want to see an improvement on when SC is playing a team that will absolutely cook you for those kind of things.
Yeah.
Like Michael Penix will be willing to do. So luckily SC's got many weeks until that happens. Stanford will be an interesting test this week, but not the test as in the big ones. All right, let's go to the last question here before we wrap this thing up. Eric says, it may have already been discussed, but if not, can you recap a play or two that brought you joy from watching SC play on Saturday? I'll go first. Marshawn Lloyd's downfield blocking. That absolutely is one that we talked about earlier. I think that was both of one of our favorite plays. Alicia, you got a favorite play besides that one?
It was the Marshawn Lloyd up the middle. That is the answer, though. We talked extensively about that Taj Washington touchdown, but I am just going to go with the Marshawn Lloyd over the middle.
Over the
top of the defense, up the seam. Yeah,
We talked about it in the CarCast. It's a play you've seen Madden that, like,
yeah.
Oh, this could work, and it never does.
Speaking of Madden, Ilium in the chat says Grinch needs to use the ask Madden function for his play calling instead of just running Storm Blitz.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a mistake that I make while playing Madden, and I am not paid $1 million to coach
but
a defense.
When the Blitz gets home, baby, it works. It works. It works, and you look good. You look good. The other play that I will say that I talked about earlier again is the RPO touchdown to Michael Jackson III. It's really simple. That read is look to see where the linebackers are and to see if there will be coverage on the slants over the middle.
Yeah.
If there is, hand off the football. If there isn't, throw the football. There wasn't. He threw the football. We're wide open. Michael Jackson III.
Yeah. L.A. Fred in the chat says the Caleb scramble touchdown pass to Rice. Absolutely. The manipulation of that pocket, which that wasn't a scramble around because the pocket broke down. That was like, this is the kind of play where a coverage sack happens because you can only hold a pocket for so long. The manipulation of that pocket by Caleb Williams to stand in there and then move and then move again to create another opportunity to then go. And oh, so good.
Mm-hmm. Ram Murdy says, like the deuce touchdown pass. Yeah, he caught the ball and just kept running. It was like what's that movie? Angels in the Outfield. Just ran all the way home.
Yep.
Nick says the run to the pass the running back always works in Madden versus man coverage if a running back is 90 speed or butter. Yes, there's conditionals there. and yeah, you if you're playing against another user though, difficult there. Because they're gonna use her a linebacker or something. But yeah. And then you hit it and then you think that you're gonna be invincible and hit it again and then it doesn't work the second time and then Then you're like me and forcing it and the next thing you know you've thrown 8 picks and your record is not great. So all right. No self-deprecating video game talk out of me, huh? All right, we're going to wrap things up there. As always, you can send us emails, randomtroy@fanside.com. Be sure to give us your calls, 818-643-7227. We'll be back Wednesday night to preview USC and Stanford, the Trojans and the Cardinal playing for the final time. My brain cannot wrap my head around that.
In conference.
Yeah, but when are they going to play out of conference?
I think that would be a game I would be looking to schedule.
Realistically, like...
Semi-soon.
I know that SC and Notre Dame and SC and UCLA are the bigger rivals, right? Obviously. But I think not playing Stanford is as foreign of a concept as those two. Like, easily. As much if, like, not on the same level. Like, it's all on the same level to me. Like... There's a reason that Pat Hayden put his foot down and said, no, SC is going to get special treatment in 2011 to make sure that SC plays Stanford and Cal every single year. So, there we go. Yeah, Kenny Martin says the longest rivalry ever. Yeah. So, all right, time to take the DOG, not the DOG. That's a.
So
I don't think we can take the DOG for a walk. No. the DOG on a WALK. So, time to check out. We'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, we will see ya.
See ya.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.